I'd like to add my thanks for the hearty folks who stayed this long into the conference. It's great to have you here. Thank you for that kind introduction. This says that I have no relationships to disclose, but I would like to disclose that I met my wife in 1973 and we've been married since 1978. That is a financial relationship and I'm proud to disclose it. This study was funded by a grant from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. And the purpose is to examine the process, cost, and value of mandated local health department nuisance inspection and abatement. I think of nuisance inspection as mandated, unstudied, and essential in public health practice. But really, there has been very little effort to quantify what is done in nuisance abatement or the value of these activities, cost or value. Nuisance abatement, a public health nuisance, is considered a condition or activity involving unreasonable interference with community health, safety, morals, or comfort. Nuisance inspection and abatement is mandated, unfunded, essential, often represents the face of the local health department to the community. It's a way that we interact with the community more broadly, and it is the single way in which health departments most likely interact with other environmental health and government departments. Oops. Sorry, that's supposed to be an animation, but it's not. As I think of nuisance abatement, I do invoke broken window theory, which people in this room, I'm sure, are aware of. It essentially states that when you leave windows broken, it contributes to social disintegration, and when conditions are addressed by nuisance abatement, we address root causes of these problems. So DONA stands for Direct Observation of Nuisance Abatement, this is a comparative case study using mixed methodology, focusing on interview, direct observation of service delivery, and abstraction of nuisance inspections, inspection and abatement reports. Time studies were conducted to measure delivery of service. We utilized 7 trained student observers who were partnered with 27 environmental health specialists across 6 local health departments in Ohio. Each of the local health departments provided access to the student observers during all steps of 167 nuisance inspection and abatement procedures. In addition, our student observers abstracted from existing nuisance reports 509 data sets that we will report on today as well. We developed our observational protocol through a focus group and Delphi process with environmental health specialists across the state of Ohio. Inter-rater reliability was demonstrated in a previous study using this methodology, but was not directly addressed during this study. This comparative case study does include, I already said that, sorry. These were the sites in Ohio. The health departments were varied in terms of location and nature. Two of the health departments were largely rural. Three more urban in nature, and one more suburban. In addition, we're using figures based on 2010 data that say that the average or median salary for public health environmental techs was a little more than $41,000. And that the environmental health worker benchmark is 1 per 25,000 population. So in our study, 56% of our EHS were male. They averaged 15 years of working in environmental health. 70% had conducted 10 or more nuisance abatements within the past 2 months. On average, they stated that 13% of their time was spent on nuisance inspection and abatement. and made the observation that 37% of the time they spent on nuisance abatement was at their desk rather than on the site doing inspections. These were the top nuisance complaints that were observed and abstracted. Property complaints were at the top of the list, followed closely by animal garbage or solid waste, and then a little more distantly by water, air, insect, sewage, and other. A minority were related to toxic materials or hazardous waste. Clearly, there's some overlap with the vector presentation done earlier today, and in fact, domestically with the water issues as well. But at least in Ohio, vector control is a different department or different part of environmental health than nuisance abatement in most health departments. This is a word cloud of the actual complaints received. You'll see prominently featured here such pleasant terms as rats, infestation, odor is actually the largest word in this word cloud. Trash, water fits in here as well. These are some of the actual complaints that were received. Musty, moldy smell throughout hotel, bed bug infestations in room where the complainant spent the night, rancid smell of dog feces, mosquitoes breeding, kiddie pools, buckets collecting water, overwhelming odor in laundry room of an apartment complex smells like old meat, a compacting room shares a vent with a laundry room. You can read others, but I'll also point out severe waste in and outside of a trailer, neglected animals locked in cages, strong odors, septic tank rusted and discharging into river. So some of these you can see affect those involved directly, others the broader community. This represents the source and object of the complaints. This is from our observational study only. Most of the complaints came from residents regarding other people's property. A significant number were anonymous complaints. 13% represented residents with concerns about their own property, about commercial property, rental property, or government employees reporting on residential property. A very small number were related to public property. The mechanism of contact was primarily by phone, but included also email or online complaints and contact through other organizations. Effort was made to contact the complainant prior to the visit about a third of the time. This represents activities that occurred during the inspection, and I'll draw your attention especially to the issue of environmental education, which happened in about 40% of the observed inspections. And I'll promote this proudly that the environmental health specialists were noted to offer clear feedback to the person on site 91% of the time, discussed an improvement plan 88% of the time, and this is at the close of the visit as opposed to during the visit, presented on environmental health education 62% of the time. These visits, as anybody who's done them would understand, are not without conflict or doubt. You can see the percentage of time that the person on site question the knowledge, judgment, fairness, or authority of the environmental health specialist. About the same amount of time there was conflict or argument between the EHS and the person on site, and any conflict or doubting of the EHS happened a little bit more than one in five times. These complaints were more likely to happen if the issue was a property complaint people on site, person on site older than the age of 40. If the inspection was deemed as stressful by the EHS, or if there was prolonged concern about the outcome by the EHS. There was no difference in conflict or doubt based on the on other types of complaints, on the gender of the person on site, the role of the person on site, or language of the person on site. These are the outcomes of the nuisance inspection process. From the observational study, 58% of the time the nuisance was remediated, partly remediated or not remediated 42% of the time. 23% required further discussion, 15% resulted in citations, another 18% in written orders, another 11% in verbal warnings. 28% of the time, further inspection was required. In 61 out of the 167 observed inspections, other governmental departments were involved in resolution of the complaint, most often housing, and Public Works, followed by the Police Department. Excuse me. In our abstraction component of the study, these had complete follow-up related to them. So what we saw there is that follow-up was completed with a complainant, with other departments in the city, with the person on site and with the prosecutor at the percentages that you see there. We did do time and motion studies and demonstrated that on average it was about a 15-minute trip prior to inspection. The time invested was 15 minutes prior to the inspection. Travel time about 20 minutes, the inspection time a bit more than an hour, the total time expended. Means salary you see as well. This did not include follow-up time. If we add the further inspection that is required and the 3.7 times more time spent on paperwork than during the inspection itself, you can see that the cost of each nuisance complaint is estimated around $171. In the city of Shaker Heights, where I serve as the director of health, we have a city of about 29,000, 95 nuisance inspections per year. The cost of that would be in the range of $16,000 unfunded dollars spent on those activities. This does not include vehicle for the sanitarium, fuel, office overhead, or inspection equipment. You'll see the inspection equipment that was noted to be used in nuisance inspections in our study as well here. In terms of the value of these nuisance inspections, 55% of EHS believe that most nuisance complaints have impact on health or safety in the community beyond the complainants themselves. And as we surveyed other departments about the importance of the health department being involved on a scale of 1 to 10, the mean importance was 9.1. In terms of community benefit, in our abstraction project, no community benefit beyond the complainant and informant was involved a little bit more than half of the time. We noted the removal of a safety hazard, removal of remediation of blight, removal of infestation, or removal of infectious disease source in the percentages that you see here. This is our look at who received the benefit. Respondent and complainant most often received benefit, followed by immediate neighborhood, neighbors, the whole neighborhood, entire community, and beyond the community a smaller percentage of time. So key findings in this project include that the top nuisance complaints involved property, animals, and garbage or solid waste. They were most often lodged by residents by phone regarding other people's property. Most were resolved at the time of the inspection. About a third resulted in citations or written orders. A significant number of contacts with other governmental departments occurred. A small but meaningful number of inspections generate tension, with significant personnel costs related to the conduct and follow-up of nuisance complaints. The real value of nuisance inspection is difficult to discern, and these inspections remain an unfunded mandate of health departments in the state of Ohio. Limitations of our study include that we utilized a convenient sample of 6 diverse local health departments with a limited number of environmental health specialists, 27. We don't know in these departments how many inspections were done per year, and there is no direct measure of inter-rater reliability among our student observers in this study. Strengths include our novel observational methodology, trained student observers. Direct observation decreases error variation when compared to self-report or time and motion studies. Retrospective abstraction component added richness and information to our project, and the use of mixed methods was an important component. Thank you for listening. Nuisance abatement is a tough job, but someone's got to do it.
All right, thank you, Dr. Frank. We now have time for questions. Sir?
I have a question about one thing that's not a local health department. So, I'm curious, in time where resources are similar to local departments, and your research seems to suggest that a lion's share of this nuisance might work, doesn't go to benefit anyway, just one complaint.
Thank you for the question. I would say that already there's a fairly wide variation in different health departments and municipal governments about how these things are handled. Some health departments do farm out some of these services. Some don't do certain kinds of inspections. But for the most part, if a complaint is made to a health department, there is a follow-up on that complaint. And even if there weren't, referring it from the health department to another location would require time. I do think that this evidence ought to either inform decision makers about providing funding to do nuisance inspection or change the mandate about how nuisance inspection should be accomplished. My personal point of view is that it is an important feature for health departments, even when the value is less obvious because of the broken window theory that I mentioned briefly. That really is where these problems that create physical distraction and chaos would contribute to social chaos as well.
Thank you. Other questions? Sure. Jason?
With regards to your study, do those counties where the health departments located, do they have counted zoning officials?
I don't believe so. I would say that there are housing and building departments in most Ohio municipalities and counties, and they may be called for a housing inspection or a building permit, but the housing inspections generally occur only at the point of sale and building only when renovations are being done. So in Ohio, I would say that the preponderance of these kinds of concerns would be followed up by health departments. For example, one of the sources of referrals in our municipality would be EMS providers with fire department who go into a home and notice hoarding or animal feces or other conditions that are difficult for the resident themselves. To what extent is that a value to the broader community? Well, I would argue that it certainly is a value to the person who's been identified, and it is our job to serve both individuals and the broader community.
Thank you.
acknowledge that different states have different organization of these kinds of things, but my understanding is I've talked with others about this issue and given different versions of this presentation at different conferences, is that most states continue to center nuisance abatement and public health departments.
I'd like the privilege of asking the next question, and this would go to Michaela and Dr. Moran. I was in Jamaica last week where chikungunya and the Zika virus, Aedes spread, viruses are of significant concern. We have the Aedes mosquitoes, of course, Aptopictus in Aegypti, all across the United States. This is going to come to us soon. If you look at and reflect on the presentations on climate change this week and look at Lyme disease, for example, and how it spread just recently in the last few years, perhaps relative to white-footed mouse populations. Based on what your project did, do you sense that vector control programs, number one, are thinking prospectively about what's right around the corner? And two, is there anything that the environmental health profession or associations like NEHA should be doing to help advocate for vector control at the local level?
Well, as a survivor of dengue fever, the personal question to me, I think that, again, a lot of what we saw in the work that we did is that geographically different locations are thinking about different issues. So I think that the folks that are thinking about those kinds of issues, about chikungunya and dengue fever, are the folks for whom it's becoming a bit of a crisis. I think ideally we would be notifying the counties and nearby, those who are yet to have this become an issue of epidemic proportion, to prepare them. Again, I think it's the capacity issue is a real one, that there, as you all know better than we do, that when resources are scarce, are we going to think prospectively or are we going to react? And we all would like to think prospectively, but unfortunately, reaction is sometimes more realistic. As far as what we can do, I think thinking quality improvement, performance management. There's real value there in having those systems in place so that you can think prospectively. You can think about. Learn first of all from what's working for you, what's not working for you, and then put systems in place so that maybe if you can't think proactively, you can at least react sooner. So I think that's an area of focus that could be of great help to vector control programs, having those systems in place.
I worked at Nature for 4 years, and I watched the ebb and flow of vector control program, financial support, just go back and forth all across the country, and it was all reactive primarily. And as soon as the initial thrust of the crisis is over, the funding begins to evaporate. So I have one final question for Dr. Misra, and that would be your work with community health workers is important. What is one lesson that you've learned in your efforts in India that we might apply in the United States?
The one lesson I would say we learned was that you can really get quality projects and improvement in health, community health and health outcome with less money. When there is a passion, when there is an interest to do it, and you work collaboratively with communities. For example, we work with a business community, and in the middle of our project, when I was doing the diabetes prevention education program, the governor was up for re-election, and this is South India, this is not where we are talking about now. And she was up for re-election, so she subsidized white rice. Now, people used to eat brown rice, and in South they eat rice for breakfast, rice for lunch, rice for dinner. So their fiber intake was generally around 20 to 25 grams, which is really good. And when they subsidized white rice, it dropped like to 5 grams overnight. So the business community gave us free high fiber cereals. We distributed that, and we were able to come up with, you know, innovative ways of coming up with recipes because it's new, and they come up with that. So the point is, the business community was willing to work with us to improve community health. That's just one example. So working collaboratively, even with less money, I think when there is a passion, I think you can make a difference.
Any final questions, comments, criticisms? Anyone need the phone number to a taxi? Yeah, question, please.
No taxi. Dr. Frank, I wanted to ask you about, we were talking about the gender of the person on site affecting conflict in situations. So when we're talking about the gender of like, the person, not the employee, but the person that was reporting to
I should have mentioned that there was no difference in conflict based on the gender of the sanitarian or the environmental health specialist or the person on site.
Okay. I was also curious.
Which I think is good. You know,
that's what I'm wondering.
Treated differently from either side of it.
Yeah, it's probably different based on gender. Mm-hmm. Is there hydraulic fracturing or oil and gas going anywhere in the section?
Yes. So in our study, it didn't really come up as an issue. I am aware that complaints do happen regarding odors, particularly related to fracking. In our study, it wasn't in either the abstractions or the observed inspections. It wasn't one of the complaints that were active.
Well, I think we're going to close the session now. I'd like to thank Dr. Misra, Dr. Frank, Dr. Marin, and Michaela. And I should have gotten your surname. I'm sorry. Thank you all. And thank you guys very much for hanging into the very end. And one last round of applause.